Գումտրեք SPS հայերենը։ Հավելյալ հետաքրքրական հաղորդումներ կգտնեք վերկայքին վրա sps.com.au/armenian.
The new year started with devastating bushfires and the resignation of the sports minister. I'll discuss these topics with Dr. Zareh Ghazaryan, senior lecturer in politics and international relations at Monash University. Dr. Zareh, welcome to SPS Armenian.
My pleasure to be with you, Vahe.
Could you give a background to the sports grants scandal? What is the sports grants scheme? How it became a scandal and what led to the resignation of the minister?
Yes, it's an embarrassing start for the government. It's not an ideal start to the year for this government. Earlier in the year, Sports Minister Bridget McKenzie, who was in charge of allocating funding to sporting groups around the country, there were claims that she was making these decisions based on political benefit. So ultimately, the charges were, or the claims were, that she was deciding who would get what money based on what political advantage that would give to the government. That in itself wasn't a problem. We expect ministers to make political decisions, and where allocated money goes is up to the minister. That's entirely an acceptable thing to do. The problem, however, was that there was a review undertaken by the Prime Minister's department, and the department found that Ms. McKenzie had actually given some money to a group that she had also been a member of. So it wasn't the fact that she had been giving money to sporting groups. It was the fact that she had given money to a sporting group which she had a conflict of interest with that ultimately led to Ms. McKenzie's removal as a minister. So this dragged on, and ultimately it took a lot of focus of the media, and it contributed to a fairly weak and poor start for the government to the new year.
And I think the grants decisions of Bridget McKenzie is not over yet, and she faces a Senate inquiry. How could this end for her?
That's right. There is still going to be an inquiry. That's going to be far more focused on the politics and trying to embarrass the government more. Really, again, when we come to ministers and the way in which the Australian political system works, ministers are ultimately responsible for the decisions they make. And if they are found to have acted illegally, or if there was some malpractice, then they are expected to resign. And ultimately, Ms. McKenzie has resigned. She has paid the ultimate political price by ending her ministerial career for now. But, you know, in terms of looking forward, what next can the government do? What next can Parliament do about Ms. McKenzie? Well, technically not much. It's just going to be a cause where the government can be more and more embarrassed by what the opposition parties might find in their inquiries. But ultimately, in a technical sense, in a legal sense, nothing more can be done about Ms. McKenzie.
And why McKenzie's resignation caused a leadership spill? What's troubling the Nationals?
That's the other problem that this has all caused. Ms. McKenzie was Deputy Nationals leader and was a prominent figure in the National Party, especially in Victoria. When she left her role, there was, of course, a new direction sought by some National Party MPs, and they tried to bring back Barnaby Joyce. This has highlighted the big division in the National Party. The National Party is a small party. It's an old party, but it's numerically small. When they have bitter divisions, as they have at the moment, it affects the entire party. And the division is between the Queensland Nationals, led, of course, by people like Barnaby Joyce, who was from Queensland, led by others who feel that the New South Wales National Party is too beholden to the Liberals. This is ultimately the National Party having an identity crisis. Is it going to be a party that supports the Liberal Party constantly, or is it a party that seeks to advance the interests of its own constituents, those living in rural and regional areas? And the division within the party is that, at the moment, Barnaby Joyce supporters feel that the party is too close to the Liberals and they need to have a better and more clearly defined identity moving forward.
Is Michael McCormack's position strong enough to lead the party to the next elections, or Barnaby Joyce will keep challenging for the position?
I think Barnaby Joyce has demonstrated that he is not someone who will just disappear. I think Barnaby Joyce has such a high public profile that whatever he says and whatever he does will ultimately be interpreted as a challenge, a leadership challenge. I think Mr. McCormack, the current Nationals leader, is in a spot of trouble. He has been able to withstand Barnaby Joyce's attacks, but for how long? And I think if the Joyce supporters do keep chipping away, then they might actually cause a change in leadership. The National Party has been fairly strong up until this point, but they've always had these divisions within the party. What I'm very interested to see as the year unfolds is, will the Joyce supporters continue to destabilise the party and try and get their man up? I think this is going to be a story that we need to follow as the year rolls on.
Besides Barnaby, are there any other potential challengers?
I don't think there are at the moment. I think Barnaby is seen to be the potential leader that some want. Now, there are others such as George Christensen, who also have a high public profile, but they're not necessarily as popular as Barnaby Joyce for some Nationals party members. So I think if a challenge is going to come, it's going to come from Joyce. When it will be, or if indeed there will be in the first place, I think it's too early in the year to know that for sure.
Was the pressure obvious on the federal government during the first sitting of the parliament?
The first sitting week of parliament was fairly difficult for the government. The problem for them was, of course, that the Bridget McKenzie story was unfolding, the Nationals party were having a leadership spill, and they were still grappling with the impact of the bushfire season and the cost that has on the economy and, of course, on people's lives. The problem for the government has been, and it has been apparent for some time after the last election, it appears unable to advance its own policy agenda. And I think when we look back over the last year, we remember that the coalition campaigned very strongly on the economy and on financial policy. But they seem to be stuck in trying to get these reforms through. The next sitting period of Parliament must be one where the government is seen to be on the front foot again. They can't afford too many of those poor sitting weeks. Because if they do, the media reports on this, the discussions start to turn, and the government's support drops away very sharply. So we already saw the first opinion polls of the year, and they showed that the government was in an election-losing position. So they can't afford to keep this up. Something's got to change. They've got to start reclaiming the policy debate. And the best thing that the coalition can talk about is the economy. This is always seen to be their strength, and I would expect them to start focusing more on that discussion more than anything else over the next few months.
As you mentioned, the year started with bushfires, and it was obviously different from previous bushfires, and many linked it to the climate change. However, the federal government is not budging. Why it refuses to consider its climate change policies?
Well, this has been a problem for all governments for the last 10, 12 years. Climate change, how to deal with carbon emissions, it has been something that has just cost so many political lives. And it's amazing to think that in 2007, at the last election with the Howard government in power, both major parties had virtually the same climate change policies that they would take forward. In the 10 years post that, and the 13 years after that, we note that climate change is such a divisive issue, such a polarising issue. And for the government, the problem is, for any government, not only the coalition in power, but even if when Labor was in power, the problem is that Australia is a major coal producer. It produces a lot of coal. It has a lot of its economic power, its economic interests vested in minerals and the things that are dug out from the ground. So it's not something that a government, a national government, can simply hit a switch and move to different forms of energy. The problem is economic, and the clear issue is that if there is going to be a change in policy, how might this affect those working in these industries, coal miners, the associated industries around those? And we saw that at the last election, where there was discussion about weakening the coal mining sector. There's this great reaction from those areas which rejected, in particular, Labor's policy and supported the coalition, which promised to keep the status quo. So the climate change debate is very much about economics.
The same with the bushfires and the floods that causes climate change.
Oh. That's right. And the issue for governments in the post-bushfire season now is this, that people have seen the devastation, especially overseas media reporting on it, and the questions are asked as to what the Australian government will do about climate change. It's something that national governments can't just give an answer to, although we are starting to see a shift just today, in the last few days, about the government wanting to invest more in technology, wanting to invest more in renewable sources of energy rather than focus on coal production. But what impact that will have, I think it's very early to tell. But it is something, at least, that we start to see shifting the government's approach, that it is being affected by the discussions and appears to be willing to somehow act. What form that action will take, we don't know yet.
The same time as Nationals were having problems, Greens leader also resigned. Do you expect any change of direction?
The Greens have really chosen someone who has been in Parliament for a while. The new leader, Adam Bandt, is in the lower house, which is the first time that the Greens have a leader in the lower house. They've always been from the Senate. I don't expect this is going to have much of an impact on how the Greens go about it, how they go about trying to influence policy, how they go about trying to influence government programs. But I would expect the Greens to be a bit more, a bit stronger in their approach to advancing their agenda. For a while, they've appeared to be a bit weak, and they've appeared to be a bit distracted from the core areas that people usually associate the Greens with, which is, of course, the environment and climate change. And I think perhaps the last election, where they didn't do as well as they could have, would cause the Greens to think about how they're going to approach the political debate, how they're going to try and maximise their support in the electorate. I don't think that there's going to be a fundamental shift in what the Greens do, but I do expect the Greens to be a bit more strategic and to think about ways to maximise the interest that they have in the electorate.
Dr. Zari Ghazaryan, thank you for the interview and looking forward to our next meeting.
Thank you for having me, Bahi. It's my pleasure.
Our guest was Dr. Zari Ghazaryan, Senior Lecturer in Politics and International Relations at Monash University. Հավնե, լայք, բաժանեք, գործիկը թայտնե, հետևե SBS հայրենին թիմադեդրի վրա։